welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, bringing you an hour of horror. Later on, we hear Vincent Price in suspense, but right now it's Murder at Midnight. This show first came out in April of 1946 with the episode we're about to hear next, and within 2 years was being syndicated to major networks like the Mutual Broadcasting System, NBC, and CBS. This episode next, called The Dead Hand, recorded on April 19th, 1946.
Come back here.
Wait, nothing. I said you were nuts, crazy. And no. No, don't.
I'm sorry, Hook. Very sorry. But I had to have it. I'm going to have it. And once you're dead, you'll never miss it.
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest. Our fears the strongest. And our strength at its lowest ebb, midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The Dead Hand. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of terror and retribution by one of radio's best-known mystery writers, Robert Newman. Its title, The Dead Hand. The small studio cottage on Dr. Martin Trent's estate. Seated at the piano, alone in the gathering darkness, is Roger Blaine, the famous pianist, and playing as only he can play.
Can't you hear me, Lorna? You must hear me, and you must come here now to me. I'm calling you, Lorna, calling to you in a way you could never resist, with my music, making your heart beat faster, your breath come quicker. Lorna!
Hello, Roger. Am I disturbing you?
Always, Lorna.
Martin's out at the hospital, and I heard you playing, so...
That's not why you came, Lorna. You came because I called you. Because you promised you'd come and give me your answer.
What we talked about last night, my going away with you? Roger, I must have been mad. I don't know what got into me.
Don't you, Lorna? This is what got into you. My music. Telling you things I never could tell you in words.
Roger, stop. I can't think when you play like that. I can't leave him. He's my husband. I love him. Respect him.
Can you love a surgical instrument? Can you compare what you feel towards him with what you feel to... now, this minute?
No. No, it is different. Roger, how can we? He's your friend. It was he that brought you here, gave you the cottage.
And haven't I given him anything? Music like this. Music such as no one has ever heard before.
Roger, I...
Lorna, listen to me. To what I'm saying here. I love you. I need you. It was you who helped me find depths within myself I never knew existed. You've got to come away with me. You owe it to me, to yourself, to the world.
Roger,
you
please.
You want to. You know you want to. And you're going to.
Roger, no, I can't. I tell you,
you are.
I...
You are.
All right.
Lorna.
We can talk to Martin when he gets home tonight. Tell him. I think he'll...
No,
understand.
Lorna, there'll be no talking, no explaining. My car's outside and we're leaving right now. The music. My music. was still with me as we drove out through the gates, down the highway, pulsing, throbbing. Yes, I could hear it, but could Lorna?
I glanced at her sitting there beside me.
Happy, dearest?
What? I don't know, Roger.
You don't know? Don't you realize what this means, Lorna? I'm playing better than I ever played before, and this is only the beginning. After my New York concert, South America, then Europe.
Roger, are you sure you love me? Me as a person?
My sure. Oh, what do you mean, Lorna?
I know you've said you do, but whenever you've talked about it, Roger, about us, you've talked in terms of your music. Roger, are you sure that's not what you love?
Well, of course I'm sure. If I didn't have my music, if I couldn't play, I don't think I could live.
I know.
It was you. You who lifted me to heights I never dreamed of, technically, emotionally.
Roger, stop the car. Turn around and take me back.
What?
Take me back.
I don't understand.
I do, for the first time. With Martin away so much, I was lonely, flattered by your attention. And your music was like a drug, keeping me from thinking. But now I can think. And I know you don't love me, and I don't love you, so please, Roger, take me back.
No.
But, Roger, can't you see? This whole thing was a mistake.
It was not a mistake. And I won't take you back.
Well, I'm going back, whether you take me or not, and if you won't stop the car,
Lorna,
I...
No, no, let go of that brake. Let go of that ditch. Look out. We're going to... When I opened my eyes, I was in a bare white room in a hospital. Standing next to the bed, Lorna and Martin.
Hello, Roger. How are you feeling?
I don't know. What happened?
You were out driving with Lorna. The car got out of control and you had a smash-up. They rushed you here to the hospital and... you've been here for 2 days.
Smash-up? Yes, I remember. Are you all right, Lorna?
Yes, Roger. I was shaken up. Cut a little bit.
My hand hurts. Especially the fingers. Nothing happened to it, did it, Martin? I've got a concert in a few weeks, you know.
Roger, don't stop it.
What? Why are you looking at me like that? Oh,
Don't worry about it, Roger. Not now.
But I've got to know. I've got to see.
Roger, please.
It's gone. Gone. My hand. My left hand. Martin, what did you do to me?
Roger, I think you know how I feel about you, about your music. You've got to believe me when I tell you there was nothing I could do about it. Nothing. It was your hand or your life.
My life? And what is my life without my music? Nothing. Worse than nothing. A living death. Why didn't you let me die?
Don't say that, Roger. We'll do anything we can. There must be something.
Something? There's just one thing. You've got to get me another hand.
We will, Roger. There have been some wonderful developments in prosthetics
war. I don't mean an artificial hand. I mean a real hand.
What? Roger, you're mad.
No, no, I'm not. You took my hand and you'll get me another one.
We'll talk about it some other time.
You think I'll forget about it, don't you? Don't you? Oh, and I won't. I say I'm going to have another hand and I will have one. And what's more, you're going to help me get it, you hear? You're going to help me.
I was able to get up and around a few days later. I didn't talk to anyone if I could help it. Because somehow I couldn't ever look at their faces, only their hands. Big hands and little ones, long-fingered ones and stubby ones. Yes, they each had two hands. And I to whom my piano meant more than life, had only one. Then, sitting alone one evening, I met Hook. I looked up, and there he was, a small, slight, sharp-featured man.
Hello. Nice evening.
Yes, I suppose it is.
You mind if I sit down for a couple of minutes?
No.
I wouldn't usually bust in on anybody except... Well, I'm getting out of here tomorrow, and I feel pretty good about it.
Oh? What was wrong with you?
A bad heart. You're going to have to take it easy from now on. It's going to make it kind of tough in some ways, but... You don't happen to have a cigarette on you, do you?
Mm, Well, yes, I do have. It's a... They're... Well, at least I did have. Silver cigarette case. Can't seem...
Is,
Find
this it?
What? Oh, yeah. Where did you find it?
In your pocket.
You mean you took it?
My name's Harris, Joe Harris. You usually call me the Hook. This is my racket. Or rather,
mean,
it was until I...
You're a pickpocket.
Well, one of the best in the business. But now with my ticket going bad, I guess I'll have to lay off, except like now for a gag. You didn't mind, did you?
Mind? Well, certainly not. I'm very impressed. As a matter of fact, do you mind if I look at your hands?
Look at them? What for?
They're beautiful. As beautiful a pair of hands as I've ever seen. It occurs to me that you say that you don't know what you're going to do when you leave the hospital here.
Well, I just hadn't thought about it much. Why?
I've got a proposition that might possibly interest you.
No kidding. What?
Well, I'd rather not discuss it with you here and now, but I expect to be leaving here myself on Friday. If you'd like to come and see me sometime after
you
that...
You say where and when?
Well, I've been staying in a little cottage on Dr. Martin Trent's estate. I'll probably be going back there. How about Saturday night, late, around 11:30?
Fine. Okay with me.
Then it's a date. I left him there, hurried back to my room. I wanted to be alone. Had to be alone, for I was afraid that what was on my mind might show in my face. It certainly was a date. A date with death.
A man obsessed, half mad, and his unsuspecting victim. Will both of them still be alive to hear it when the clock strikes 12:04?
Murder. Midnight.
And now, here is Roger Blaine to continue Murder at Midnight.
I did leave the hospital on Friday, went back to the little studio cottage. By Saturday night, my arrangements were completed. They weren't very complicated. I made it clear to Lorna and Martin that I wanted to be alone, and I picked up a length of iron pipe. The pipe I hid inside the piano when I heard footsteps coming down the path. There was a knock on the door. Come in.
Hi. Not too late, am I?
No, you're not too late.
Hey, pretty nice place you got here.
Yes, it is quite nice. Sit down.
Oh, thanks. Now, what's this here proposition you want to talk to me about?
It's a very simple one. How would you like to make $10,000?
What do I have to do?
You don't have to do anything. Just sell me something. Your left hand.
What? You're nuts.
No, I'm serious. I've got the money right here in cash.
I don't get it. I just don't understand.
Look, I'm a musician. I'm a pianist. Or... I was until I lost my hand. If I can't go on playing, then life doesn't mean anything to me. My own life or anyone else's. But you, how important is your hand to you? Now, an artificial one will do almost as well. And you can live for quite a while on $10,000.
You mean you really thought I'd sell you my hand? Let you cut it off? I'm getting out of here.
Look, wait.
Wait, nothing. I said you was nuts, but I didn't really think... Well, what are you going to do with that? No, don't, you can't. Some way, somehow I'll get you for this. I swear.
I'm sorry, Hook. Very sorry. But I have to have it. I'd rather not go into what happened after that. I got rid of the body, and then I went to see Martin.
You don't look well, Roger. Anything the matter?
No, I just came to see you about your promise.
My promise?
Or your debt, whichever you choose to call it. I told you I wanted another hand, that I was going to get another hand, and that you were going to help me. Well, now you can help me.
What do you mean?
Look in here, in this package. See?
Good Lord. Where did you get this?
It might be better if you didn't ask too many questions. I'm fighting for my life, for more than my life. You took my hand away from me. Well, now you can give me this one.
You mean you honestly, seriously think that I can perform an operation of this sort, do a graft, and that after I'm finished, you'll be able to use the hand?
Why not? Operations of this sort have been done, haven't they? With other parts of the body? The eye?
The cornea, not the eye. And some nerve grafting has been done. But this... Look, Roger. I know what a shock this whole thing has been to you. Know it better than you. You're not a well man.
A well man? I'm only half alive. And I'd rather be dead than go on living this way. But if I do die, I won't die alone. That's why I brought this along.
Roger!
A gun. Quick, easy, painless. If you won't do what I want, you die. And so does Lorna. Both of you, along with me.
You don't give me very much choice.
No.
All right. You win. Get me to the hospital.
Even before I became fully conscious, before I opened my eyes, I knew that it had been done, that it wasn't his hand anymore, but mine. Still, there was something wrong. I couldn't analyze what it was at first, but it was there. A feeling that something wasn't quite right. That perhaps it wasn't entirely my hand. I sat up. The hand was a mass of bandages, stiffened with splints. And inside the bandages...
Careful, Roger. Don't touch them.
Huh? Oh, Martin, I didn't see you.
I've been here with you ever since last night.
Last night? You mean I've been out that long, 24 hours?
It was very important that you keep quiet. You've been under sedation.
Oh yes, of course. But this isn't the hospital.
No, I brought you home with me, back to the house.
Oh.
I thought it would be best for several reasons.
Oh, that's very smart, Martin. We don't want any questions, do we? Not yet. You did do it, didn't you?
What? Yes.
I knew you would and could. And it's going to work. It is working. I can feel it.
Please, Roger. You must be careful with that bandage.
Hmm?
You can't touch it, move it, disturb it in any way.
I won't, Martin. But I don't have to. I tell you, I can feel the fingers moving, even inside this. And in another week or so...
We'll see.
Yes. We'll see. Got a cigarette, Martin?
Of course, I have it right. That's funny.
Hmm? What is?
Well, my cigarette case. It was right here in my breast pocket. I must have left it downstairs at the hospital.
It doesn't matter. I can do it. Martin.
Yes?
I think... Here it is. Under my pillow.
What? How did it get there?
I don't know. It must have fallen out when you bent over. But... No.
Why are you looking like that?
Because... I think I know how it did get under my pillow.
What do you mean?
When fingers learn something, special skill, they don't forget it, ever. Mine never have. Even when I'm not thinking of what I'm doing, they go on playing by themselves. These fingers here, they haven't forgotten either. You understand?
I'm afraid
forget
I...
Forget it. I'm awfully tired all of a sudden, Martin. Would you mind?
No, Roger. I'd like you to get as much rest as possible. There's a friend of mine coming here tomorrow to see you. Another doctor.
That's fine, Martin. I'll see you in the morning. Yes, I was tired, but that wasn't why I asked Martin to go. It was because I wanted to be alone, because I had to be alone. Because I knew now what it was that I'd only sensed before. The hand. Hook's hand. Had a will of its own. It had picked Martin's pocket without my even being aware of it. I lay there alone in the darkness after Martin went, not touching the bandages, but flexing the fingers, forcing them to obey my will. I had to do that. I knew I had to do it because I suspected what might happen. And what did happen proved that I was right. I fell asleep finally. And while I was asleep, I dreamed. I dreamed I was walking down a dark, labyrinthine corridor somewhere under the earth. Then...
A little closer, Roger.
Huh?
Just a little closer.
Who's that? Who's there?
Just me. Waiting for you.
Hook!
Yeah, Hook. I said it'd get you. No, well...
Out of the darkness came a hand that clutched me by the throat, gripped it tighter. 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 I fought against it. Tried to scream. And woke up. Yes, I woke up. And my waking was more horrible than the dream, for the hand was there, gripping me by the throat, moaning, exerting every ounce of my strength and will. I fought it off. Bathed in a cold sweat, staring at it, feeling the fingers quivering inside the bandages. My hand or his, I was tied to it now. Tied to a thing that was seeking to destroy me. Shaking convulsively, I leaped out of bed. I ran out into the hall and down the stairs to the living room. The piano. That was the one thing that might save me, save my reason. Seating myself at the piano, I started to play, using only my right hand at first. I tried to force left hand, his hand, to join in. Then suddenly...
No, Roger.
No.
That won't work.
Yes.
No music.
Stop it. Stop it. Do you hear it? It's my hand now. It's mine.
No, Roger. Never.
But it is. I'm stronger than you are.
Nothing is stronger than I am. Nothing in the world. And there's no escape. Because we're one now, Roger. And wherever you go... I'll be there, too.
It's not true. It's not... What are you doing?
Just a little closer to the desk, Roger.
No.
A little closer. That paper knife.
No, you can't.
But I can, Roger. I told you I'd get you somehow. Some way.
Put it down. Drop
it. You can't fight against me, Roger. I told you. I'm too strong.
Margaret! Lana! Quick! The hand,
Saint! The hand! Where is he, Martin?
The living room. I heard the piano and... Good Lord.
Roger!
He's dead.
But why? How? He was saying something about a hand.
He was in a completely psychotic state as a result of shock and a sense of guilt. The state psychiatrist was coming tomorrow to commit him.
Oh, Martin.
That hand he brought me, wanted me to graft on. I don't know where he got it, but I suspect that was behind the whole thing.
Behind it?
Yes.
Well, what do you mean?
You don't really think I did graft it on, do you?
Why?
He was desperate, and I had to do something to quiet him. I splinted his left wrist, wrapped it in bandages, and told him not to touch them.
But, Martin, that paper knife in his chest...
Which hand is holding it?
His right one, his good one.
Yes. And still, in a way, it's possible that the dead hand, the one he was so concerned about, did guide it.
Her eyes wide with awful comprehension, Lorna stares at her husband, then down at Roger Blaine's body as somewhere in the silent house, a clock starts chiming for murder at midnight. Remember to be with us again when death stretches out his bony hand and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight is directed by Anton M. Leader. Thank you.
Murder at Midnight on Tuned to Yesterday. That episode heard on Mutual in a syndicated format from May 1st, 1950. The show first recorded 4 years before, and reportedly it cost about $5,000 an episode to produce. In today's money, around $55,000. It's an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now it's time for Suspense with Vincent Price and Lloyd Nolan, starring in the story Hunting Trip, designed to keep you in suspense. The CBS broadcast first heard on September 12th, 1946.
And now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world, Roma Wines presents Suspense.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Vincent Price and Mr. Lloyd Nolan as stars of Hunting Trip, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear.
It began with just a little hunting trip for the two of us, Eric and me. I hadn't seen Eric for several months, since before Karen died, in fact. When I bumped into him at the club, he suggested that we run up to his cabin in the mountains for a few days, grab a bit of fresh air and relaxation, see if we couldn't bag ourselves a moose or a deer. And yet, almost at the outset, I had an uncanny feeling about that trip. I suppose, actually, it was the night and the setting. It was the blackest night I'd ever seen. We'd left all humankind behind us. There was no moon. There was only blackness, the kind that seemed to be all enveloping, as though there was nothing outside our car but blackness. No road, no forest, no mountains. Well, I'll admit I was nervous. I was boring my feet into the floorboard of the car, as though somehow that would help. What are you laughing at?
You, Stan. You don't look as though you're having a very good time.
Well, I'm not. Shouldn't you be driving a little bit slower?
Why?
Why? Good heavens, Eric, if you make just one little slip at the wheel, we're done for, that's all. I doubt if they'd ever even find us down in those canyons.
Nonsense. I know every crook and turn in this road.
Oh, yeah?
I don't think you're much of an outdoors man,
Stan. Well, maybe not. I love this kind of country in the daytime, but I'll confess I'm not so keen on it at night. I don't like what I can't see.
Funny, I'm just the opposite. There's a challenge in the darkness that stimulates my senses. Hmm. It's exhilarating. It stirs my imagination.
Well, sure, I suppose it would. But I'm not equipped to grapple with the mysteries of the universe.
Stan, you're much too modest. You always were. You've gotten out of life pretty much what you wanted, haven't you?
Well, yes, I suppose so.
Now, then don't always be belittling yourself. It's an effective technique, Stan, but I'm on to you. You're as clever as the next fellow, in your own way.
Sat back and tried to relax. Things weren't quite as Eric had pictured them. I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, as they say. Eric had come up the hard way. I was average and soft. He was brilliant and hard. We'd known each other a long time, going to school together, being in love with the same girl, Karen. When I married her, he was my best man, and yet I didn't pretend to understand him. He was still pretty much of a stranger to me. I glanced over his way. He actually seemed to be enjoying himself. It crossed my mind that he was rather enjoying seeing me in a bit of a lather, too.
Well, it's not far now, just around the next bend.
Well, thank the Lord. Well, am I amusing you again?
No. I was just thinking what a perfect spot this would be for a murder.
A murder? Honestly, Eric, I believe that's all you think about.
It is, almost. When I buy a newspaper, I read about murder the way you study the stock quotations. Murder is fascinating to me. I spend most of my time figuring out ways and means to commit murder.
Now you're trying to sound like a mental case.
Who knows? Perhaps I am. I have a mind. Well, here we are, old man.
Yeah.
You see, I've delivered you safe and sound, all in one piece.
Eric's cabin was perched high on a rocky crag jutting out from the side of a mountain with one wall flush against a sheer drop.
In front, there was a steep path leading down to a lake. I could hear the lapping of the waves. Eric fixed us something to eat, then went outside. And pretty soon, he came back in. Arm full of logs. His face was red and healthy.
I don't think you like my place, Stan.
Huh? Oh, yes, I do. Honestly, I'm just tired, I guess.
Well, we'll turn in directly.
Oh, thanks.
Cigarette?
Yes, thanks. I believe I will.
I like it here. All the privacy in the world.
Mm-hmm. Say, Eric.
Yes?
Why do you read about murder?
Why do you read about stocks and bonds?
Well, because they interest me. It's my business.
My business doesn't interest me. I read about murder because I'm interested in people. Murder is emotional. And when people are being emotional, you get to see more of them.
Why are you so interested in people?
Oh, I think I'm more curious than interested.
Well, all right. Why so curious?
It amuses me. I find out about people. I write down what I find out, and I write my impressions of how those people will react to a series of circumstances. It's a good way to get rid of one's inhibition.
Sort of a frightening hobby.
I think stamp collecting is frightening.
You're too darn clever, Eric.
Why too clever?
Well, I mean you see through people.
Well, what's wrong with that? Unless, of course, they have something they want to hide.
Oh, I suppose it's all right, if your friends don't mind.
Do you?
Mine? No, heavens no. Why should I?
That's right. Why should you? Well, how about hitting the hay? We have to be up early. We'll only get a few hours sleep as it is.
That suits me.
You sleep in my study, Stan. The bed's in there is a bit more comfortable. I'll bunk out here on the couch.
I had undressed and gotten into bed and was reaching over to put out the light on Eric's desk when my eyes fell on a stack of typewritten sheets. I wondered if they were the notes Eric had been speaking about. The strange mumbo-jumbo he'd written there, phrases he liked, single sentences describing people he'd met. There were a few clippings pasted on sheets of white paper, clippings describing murders by strangulation, by pistol, by drowning, by poison. The full sheet was devoted to Karen. I hadn't realized how much he'd cared for. His analysis was very kind, almost maudlin. He spoke of his shock at hearing of her suicide, and he tried to reason it, to find causes. A small memo pad caught my eye, however. And on the last page, I saw my name carefully printed. I read it eagerly, read Eric's arguments for not hating me because I'd married Karen. I read Eric's cold analysis of my character. Not exactly flattering, but it was pretty accurate. And at the bottom of the page, newly written by the looks of it, and in Eric's own careful hand, I read, "Four ways to commit murder. By strangulation, by pistol bullet, by drowning, by poison." Slept that night, but it seemed as though I had only just dozed off when I heard the door open quietly. I opened one eye cautiously. It was still gray in the room, so I know I hadn't slept long. I was about to open both eyes to save Eric the trouble of waking me when I thought, he hasn't come to wake me. My mind threw two words at me. By strangulation. Before I had the chance to move, I felt his hands carefully on my throat. Don't!
Why, Stan, what's the matter?
I thought for a minute that...
Yes?
I guess I must have been dreaming. Nightmare.
You grabbed hold of my hands like you thought I was going to strangle you.
Oh, did I?
What's the matter? Have you got a guilty conscience?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I have. What did you want, Eric?
Time to get up.
Oh, already?
Yeah, that's right. I've got good news, too. I just spotted a likely-looking buck right across the lake when I went down for water.
Oh, good, good.
Well, I'll get breakfast going. As soon as you're ready.
Yeah, I'll be right with you.
Now, there's no rush. Take your time. Nice to have you here.
Well, maybe it was the way that he'd said that, as though he'd really meant it. For a minute, I was convinced that I'd let my imagination run away with me. As for putting his hand on my throat, that was an accident. He'd been groping for my shoulder. And then the next minute, I was asking myself, was it an accident, though? Suppose I'd really been asleep. Suppose I hadn't grabbed his hands. I still didn't know what to think. Well, I dressed, and we sat down to breakfast.
Oh, pass me your cup, will you, Stan? I'll give you some coffee. There you are.
Thanks.
Sugar coming up.
No sugar for me, thanks.
Well, Stan, when are you going to confess?
What do you mean, confess?
Or shall I drag it out of you?
What are you driving at?
Oh, come now. You're not going to play the adolescent schoolboy with me.
I swear, I don't
I'm referring to the lovely young woman you've been seen dining with and taking to the theater.
Oh, you mean Marcia.
Is that her name?
Yes.
Well, go on. Where did you meet her? How? When? Is she wealthy? Is she as beautiful as they say she is? Come on. Let's have the sordid details.
No, Eric, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Am I?
Oh, I'll admit I've taken her out occasionally, but nothing like that.
Marcia, do I know her?
No, I don't believe you do.
Isn't her last name Jenkins?
Yes.
Oh, of course I know her. That is, I met her. Well, don't you remember? You introduced me to her yourself.
Oh, did I?
Yes, don't you remember? I ran into you at Silver's. You were buying perfume, and she was helping you select it. For Karen, remember?
Oh, yes. Now that you recall it.
More coffee?
Yeah, no sugar. Well, when we got to the lake, we bailed out the boat, loaded it, and pushed it out into the fog. It was still half light when we reached the other side, so we sat in the boat and lighted cigarettes, waited for the sun to come up. We'd been sitting there, just smoking, not saying anything, when he suddenly turned to me and said...
You say that she'd been ill.
Karen. Yes. Yes, she'd been ill for some time, Eric.
So she killed herself.
Yes. Yeah.
There was an inquest, of course.
Well, yes, of course. Why do you ask?
Look at that sun. Did you ever see such color?
Four ways to commit murder. I'd almost forgotten about Eric's hands on my throat. Now the incident jumped vividly back to my mind because now I knew that Eric had a reason. He looked away after he asked me about the inquest. He didn't answer me when I asked him why he wanted to know. Somewhere in that strange, dark corner of his mind, he was still obsessed by love for Karen, even though she was dead and gone. He thought that she'd still be alive and happy if she hadn't married me. My legs were weak when he motioned me out of the boat. A deer blew somewhere near us. We stopped.
Hey, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Listen. It's moving west.
Yeah.
Stan, you work west. Just about half a mile or so ahead of us, you'll come to a clearing.
Mm-hmm.
Take your stand there.
Right.
I'll strike north and west and then work toward the clearing. Good hunting.
This is it, then, I thought. He'll hide somewhere along the way to the clearing and shoot me in the back. Now that I knew what to expect, I felt somewhat relieved. At least I'd be ready for him. Nothing happened until I'd nearly reached the clearing. And then I got the feeling that someone was walking with me, timing his steps with mine. I stopped and listened. I don't know how long I stood there, my rifle gripped in my hands. But suddenly, instinctively, I wheeled around. A shot whistled over my head. Then I saw a buck running across the clearing. He'd shot at me and missed. Well, two can play at that game, I thought. The next shot would be mine. I wouldn't miss. I dropped on my knees watching the brush for him. Then all of a sudden, I saw him running toward me right out in the open. I started to raise my rifle, but I couldn't. I couldn't kill a man that way in cold blood.
Stan, did I hit you?
Confound you.
Now, hold on a minute, old son. Let's not lose our heads. I'm terribly sorry, of course, but I had no idea you were to take stand in the clearing, so I naturally assumed you were there. I don't know what I can say.
Well, maybe it was my fault. I don't know. Anyway, let's forget it.
But I
said let's skip it. I stuck close to Eric after that. I gave no more opportunity for a shooting accident. It was dusk when we headed back toward the cabin. We didn't get our buck, not that I cared, and I'm sure Eric didn't. He was after different game. Then I saw a boat on the beach. By drowning. Here we were alone. I couldn't refuse to get in the boat with him. There was no other way of getting back to the cabin. I could feel the perspiration trickling down my ribs. I stumbled in the underbrush.
Easy, easy now. Hey, it's too bad we didn't bag that fella.
What?
That buck. Better luck tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah, better luck tomorrow.
You seem preoccupied, Stan.
Do I?
Yes, I have the ghastly feeling that I'm failing you as a host. I don't think you're having a very good time.
I think this is a marvelous country, Eric.
You've exercised phenomenal restraint, old son.
What do you mean?
About expressing your admiration for it. I'd never have suspected that you liked it so much.
That remark called for some sort of an answer, but I wasn't equal to it. Fortunately, I was spared the necessity. We reached the lake and the boat, then we tossed our guns into it. Eric started to push out to shore.
Hop in, Stan. Easy does it now. Hang on to the oars, will you, while I climb in? All set?
All set.
Splendid. Here, now, you better let me row. I know this lake. There's some treacherous spots in it.
What do you mean?
Oh, some nasty boulders sticking up. Some of them that aren't easy to spot. Come too close to the surface for comfort.
I see.
If we were to hit one of them, we'd turn over in a hurry. You don't swim, do you, Stan?
You know darn well I don't.
Oh, that's a shame. It's a mistake not to learn to swim, don't you think?
What happened after that was a nightmare. He rowed. I sat there, paralyzed. I couldn't move. I couldn't think. I knew I should do something, but what? I stared at the water till I was blind, looking for rocks. Eric's face was a blur. He just smiled, rowed. Rowed and talked. His voice sounded hollow and unreal.
You're shaking, Stan. Is something wrong? This lake's plenty deep. Lots of fish in it, too. Maybe we can do a little fishing.
He stopped suddenly. He'd seen something in the water. He turned around, pulled hard on the oars. We'd reached the spot, he knew it. And then...
No! No, Eric, get out! Eric, with the love of God!
When I came up, Eric was there in the water near me. He didn't speak. He just grinned. And then I saw his face above mine, grinning. I saw him raise his face, strike me, and that's the last I remember. When I came to, I was lying on the beach, and Eric was standing over me, smiling.
Well, hello. How are you feeling?
Okay, I guess.
Say, you're a tough customer to rescue, old son. You put up quite a fight.
I'm sorry. I thought
no,
that maybe...
No, don't try to talk now. You've had a pretty bad time. Take it easy.
Well, it was all clear to me then. Eric had saved my life. It had been accidental. The shot, the boat turning over. He didn't want to kill me. A man doesn't save you from drowning when he wants you dead. But it had all been my imagination, a nightmare. Oh, the relief that flowed through my body was almost too much for me. It would... Well, there aren't words to express how I felt. A little later, Eric helped me up to my cabin, and I stretched out on the couch. Eric went to the kitchen to fix hot coffee and soup. He brought the coffee in first, pulled up a coffee table close to me, and poured us each out a cupful.
There you are. Get some of that into you, and you'll feel different.
Oh, thanks.
I'll be back in a second. Soup coming right up. Hey, Stan, do you like to cook?
Huh?
I said, do you like to cook? You know, I do. I like to try different concoctions.
Oh, not me. I'd starve to death if I had to cook for myself. Oh, man. This coffee hits the spot.
Yeah, I can use a little of that, too. It sure does warm the innards, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I got a little chilled.
Nothing like a cup of coffee, I always say.
That's what I always say, too, Stan.
Why did I say something funny? Am I amusing you again?
Immensely. Yeah. In fact, Stan, I think that's probably the funniest thing you ever said. Mm-hmm. How did you like it, Stan? Four ways to commit murder. You read it, of course.
Why, yes, I couldn't
tell you had, just as I intended you to. Were you frightened all day today?
I don't understand.
You didn't know, did you, that I came to your engagement party to ask Karen to be my wife. I wasn't aware that you were throwing a party or that she had accepted you.
Oh, good Lord.
Perhaps you don't remember what I told you that night. You thought I was joking, but I meant every word I said. That I'd make you pay if you failed Karen, if you made her unhappy.
But then all these years you would... Then you did bring me up here to...
Murder you? You're so right, Stan.
But you pulled me out of the lake. You saved my life.
You are a dull-witted clown, aren't you, Stan? Don't you know me better than that? Did you think I'd kill you in the manner of a homicidal moron? Oh, no, Stan.
But you did take a shot at me.
Oh, yes. That was the second way. The first way was by waking you up by the throat this morning. The boat tipping over was the third way.
And now I suppose we've reached the fourth way.
Your brilliance positively staggers me.
You can't get away with it, Eric.
Oh, yes, I can. I have. You see how intently I'm watching you? I'm waiting to see you fall. You're going to die, Stan, just as Karen died.
What do you mean?
In the coffee, Stan. That's right. Your coffee's poisoned, just as you poisoned her coffee. Only yours is a slow poison. Poetic justice, don't you think?
You poisoned my coffee?
Yes, I wore down your guard. I planned it so that by now you would trust me. You would have faith in me.
You poisoned my coffee?
What have you...
I didn't drink my coffee, Eric. I changed cups with you. There was sugar in my cup, Eric.
I don't take sugar in my coffee, Eric. So I changed cups with you. I didn't mean to do it, Eric, but... I don't like sugar in my coffee.
So you see, I didn't... kill Eric, really. He killed himself accidentally, but I wish he had killed me. He had a good reason to, because somehow he knew about Karen, about how I killed Karen, by putting poison in her coffee that morning, and I watched her die, the same way that I watched Eric die. I'm tired now. I don't want to talk anymore. You do whatever you want with me.
By Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. And now, our two distinguished stars, Lloyd Nolan and Vincent Price, are returning for a curtain call with William Spear, our producer-director of Suspense. Mr. Spear is carrying two large gift baskets of Grand Estate California wines.
Lloyd and Vincent and Lloyd, just to keep the billing straight. We want you each to have a basket of these Grand Estate wines with our compliments for a thrilling performance.
Oh, hey, thank you, Bill. Hey, this is quite a selection.
It certainly is. My thanks, too, Bill. Well, there must be a Grand Estate wine for every occasion here.
I guess there is, isn't there, Ken?
Well, there is indeed, Bill. Even my favorite, Grand Estate Medium Sherry.
Vincent, what's new and startling over on the 20th Century Fox lot?
Well, they're pretty excited about Daryl Zanuck's film version of Mom's The Razor's Edge, which has just finished up shooting.
And I guess the picture that they like best among the current releases is Claudie and David.
You're on loan out just now, away from the home lot, aren't you, Vincent?
That's right, Bill. And Lloyd is, too.
Oh. Yes, yes, sir. I will be in a couple of weeks. Right now, I'm just loafing, grabbed a little fishing, took a hunting trip up north.
You wouldn't want to go on a hunting trip with me, would you, Lloyd?
No, thanks. I had plenty of that tonight on Suspense. Bill, who's on the show next Thursday?
It's Dane Clark in a suspense play about a gunsel, a professional murderer who doesn't know he has any emotions until he finds himself falling in love with the wife of a man he's killed.
Sounds wonderful. We'll be listening, eh, Lloyd?
Oh, yeah, sure thing.
Swell. Well, then, if you two will relieve me of these baskets of Grand Estate wines before my arms give way and there's a loud crash.
Thanks again, Bill.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Next Thursday, same time, listen to Dane Clark on Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from September 12th, 1946 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.